All right, welcome back to the War Room. We are here to talk about some more dirt bike racing. Don't worry, there is football coming back since the Texans, as of two or three days ago, actually won their playoff game. So we're going to be bringing that to you soon. But we're here to talk about dirt bikes. Time to recap the San Francisco Supercross race, which was an absolute mutter. And saying it, even saying it was an absolute mutter is kind of an understatement. My kind of initial thoughts when I saw the track, you know, after the heat races, was it kind of looked like Taco Bell post digestion. So like, it just looked bad, just a little bad, yeah. Dude. So I mean, it looked like Dairy Queen tacos, dude. It was bad. Like the meat that comes out of a gun. That's what it looked like. And yeah. And the racing was just about the same, you know, like we're watching this isn't a bad thing. The starts were like awesome because you see the giant, you know, stream of water. It looks like jet skis coming down the mud pit, right? It was awesome.
Oh yeah.
So the starts were cool. The first couple turns were cool. And then for the next like 15 to 20 minutes, we're watching the best riders in the world single and roll over every single jump because it was that bad. It doesn't say the race was boring or anything. It was just that it was a different kind of racing, right? Like,
yeah,
you would see someone start to catch up to someone and go to make the move. And usually that move would be like, oh, he made the move. Instead, it's like, oh, he's getting closer. He's attempting to pass. He has a wheel there. They're side by side. And then it's like 2 hours later. And then The move's finally done. You know, they got to like roll over three more jumps and he may have a leg up. Maybe one of the guys falls over. There was multiple riders. Like, I think half the field fell over multiple times. I mean, it was an absolute just trash fest of mud and dirt bikes that just beautifully came together. And I hope we don't have another one this season, honestly, because I want to see all the guys do, you know, push the bikes to their limit. Or at least if we have another one, at least it be a little more raceable than that was, because this one might have even been worse than New Jersey last year where Barcia won.
It was really bad. Well, they even got rid of the whip section pretty much to make it more raceable, and it still, you know, was like a bunch of grandmas out there riding around.
And they were still falling over there. Yeah, like after the heat races, they dozed down the whoops and turned them into rollers. And it really, like, obviously it made it doable, but it didn't really necessarily help the racing that much because it was just that bad. Like, it just did not stop coming down. I mean, but in regards to that topic, do you think they should have knocked down those rollers even before the heat races and just been like, okay, like, there's no hope for these whoops being usable?
I think they needed the heat race to see how many guys were going to be having trouble and have to exit the track on the whoop section. I mean, I think there was like two laps in a row where Hunter Lawrence had to go off track on the whoop section of the heat race. And, you know, so they needed something to show, okay, let's get rid of these things. But yeah, it didn't seem a whole heck of a lot better even after that. So I don't know.
Just like the racing. I don't mean to say the racing, because there was some good battles going on. Just like the ability for the riders to get through the track. Like, it was just, if you keep it on two wheels, you're going to pass 10 guys because everyone's just falling over left and right.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, with that being said, where are we starting here?
I think we need to talk about RJ, because I had high hopes for him coming into this. And obviously, when it's a mud race, everything is up in the air. I did think it was interesting. We didn't have that weird of podiums, because, you know, sometimes whenever you have a mud race, the podiums are like, where did this come from? You know, it's like a podium you would have never anticipated. 250s, it was pretty close, but unfortunately RJ did have a bad night, and obviously he's, assuming conditions are appropriate, he's kind of the guy this season, and he did not have a good night, unfortunately.
He was slated for a good one, dude. I mean, he was in third trying to gain time on Jordan Smith and the other guy ahead, and was just going over, you know, like the entire field, singling everything. So he's just going over the top of a roller. And then I don't believe he's actually French. I'm not 100% sure. For all I know, he could be like the French guy from Talladega Nights. But he and his poor man Suzuki tipped her over right in front of RJ's line, and RJ had to come to a complete stop and try to get around, and then fell over from losing momentum at the top of the next little roller at the top of that jump, or lack of jump, if you whatever you want to call it, which is the worst place to get stuck at if you're a dirt bike rider, is right on top of the going up part of a jump ramp. So he fell all the way down to 10th, and I think he finished 10th. So that kind of happened midway to late in the race. So that kind of ruined his night. But honestly, to come out of there salvaging as many points as he did and only be 9 points down on Jordan Smith, who had a perfect night.
Not bad.
I don't think he'd be too mad. I don't think he can be too mad.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, with the mud race, like I said, like, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it could be, you know, anybody's night. If you get – basically, if you can get a good start and you can just, like you're saying, not fall over, you don't have to go that fast, really. Just don't fall over, and you should pretty much be good. So, speaking of which, that's exactly what Jordan Smith did, and did very well. He got a pretty nice gap on everybody too for a little while there. So,
I will say Levi Kitchen was coming for him those last couple.
He was.
I was wondering if we was gonna have like, and because Jordan Smith had no idea, like he was just cruising. I was wondering if we were gonna get a little last lap pass there, because I don't know where he found it. I don't know what he was doing, but Levi Kitchen just started to find, what little, and I mean sliver of traction was left on that track. And I think he got it down to like 5 seconds with like half a lap to go. And just, I mean, I think one more lap and he catches him.
Yeah, he was right there. You know, it's kind of a similar finish to what we had in the 450s, honestly, because, you know, Chase was kind of just cruising along for a while there. He was doing perfectly fine, nobody in sight. And then Eli just slowly started creeping up. And one or two more laps, you know, Eli might have passed him. And so we had a very similar situation with Levi and Jordan there at the end.
100%.
So, yeah, very interesting. Now, and the Muckoff boys had a pretty nice night too, huh?
That might be the best night that Muckoff has had as a team in years. I mean, Filthy Phil almost got a podium, but if one of your guys is going to lose a podium, he loses it to the other Muckoff guy of Garrett Marchbanks, which honestly, for the sake of the memes, I'm kind of pissed that Garrett Marchbanks passed him on the last lap, but it was fair. They were just racing, you know. I will say Filthy Phil got messed over by someone who fell down right in front of him while he was on top of a tabletop or on top of a jump. But he was at the very top of it, so he's able to come to a complete stop and wait for the guy to move over. Because at the top of that jump, you can't maneuver. You can't just, like, scoot your bike over to the side. But if you watch the video, it's one of the funniest – from the broadcast, it's the funniest, like, mid-stop video I've ever seen. It's Phil Nicoletti at the top of a jump about to go down, hits the brakes when he sees the dude just waddle and fall over in front of him. And he revs the engine, and he's doing his head like this. And it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Apparently, the guys that were on the ground could hear him like talking mess to the guy that fell over and was shaking his head and revving his engine. And if you haven't seen the video, you got to go watch it. It's just that just perfectly sums up Phil Nicoletti. So that's part of the reason that Garrett Marchbanks caught up to him, because he pretty much lost like 10 seconds there. And that was like a lap or two before the last lap. It may have been like the second to last lap. So
yeah, and when Garrett passed him, he had really good momentum, and Phil was just kind of stuck in the mud, for lack of a better term, and couldn't get going. So yeah, but really great night for those boys. I know you had you picked Phil on your Pulp MX, didn't you?
I did pick Filthy Phil.
Wonderful pick, especially with obviously out of the top 10 from not being able to race A1, and that was a good one.
I mean, in a way, I kind of by force picked the best team I could have. I had Aaron Plessinger as my all-star, great mud rider, right? Unfortunately, had a little bit of bad luck in the main event in regards to the start, or more like a half lap after the start. We'll get into that later, but I had him. I had a Filthy Phil on my 250 squad. I last minute backed out of Joe Shimoda and switched over to Garrett Marchbanks, I believe.
Incredible swap. I mean, how could you have done it better?
No, the funniest thing is I don't even have to like screenshot the text and show them. Like I subbed them out last minute, like minutes before the deadline on Pulp MX, and then the heat races start. The first heat race, Joe Shimoda is just he pulls ripping. The whole shot, ripping it,
yeah.
ripping it. I don't know if he pulled the whole shot, but he was in first for the first lap. At his text, he was like, I made a mistake. Like,
I have the text right here.
Just LOL.
Yeah.
and luckily, the main event did not go in his favor. Luckily for me, not for him. I actually hated seeing that as much as it benefited my fantasy team. And then my due to the luxuries of Anaheim 1, I got to have Eli Tomac and Ken Roczen as non-all-stars. So that was just money. So
incredible. The thing that sucked is I'm pretty sure I picked them last week, so they didn't do good for me last week, and then I couldn't pick them this week, and you scooped them up. And
they don't let you pick them 2 weeks in a row. That's the problem. And that's the only thing that would have prevented me from picking Malcolm this week. But the fantasy gods of Pulp MX with that rule kind of lucked me out of that.
They saved you. You can't burn. Yeah, you can't burn yourself.
They saved me.
I picked him. So, yeah, there you go. All right. I guess only thing left really is Nate Thrasher. I mean, this is just so unfortunate. You know,
the guys that are having the worst time right now, without a doubt, are Nate Thrasher and Malcolm Stewart. Those guys,
I would put Joe Shimoda too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's up there. So three dudes just straight up not having a good time. I would say that Mookie and Thrasher on like a slightly higher level, because at least Shimoda got fourth in his main event and he's got a decent amount of points. Dude, that's Malcolm's true. All the way down in 17th. He's got 11 points to his name. I mean, the dude rode around and finished. We'll talk about this more later. He rode around and finished the race two laps down just to get 0 points. Because somehow everyone finished the mud race. I don't know how there was no DNFs, but you would think riding around two laps down a mud race, hey, if I at least just finish, somebody's going to DNF, their bike's going to get too much mud in the radiator or something like that, or whatever it is, or just topple over, you know, hit the dome, whatever it is, and you'll get at least 1 point, right? But nope, no points, even though he finished. And it's a rough one for him. And then Thrasher, I mean, just had a mediocre race as well. Not even mediocre is the word, just bad race as well. Basically got no points for Anaheim 1. Then comes out here. Did he even get – I don't even think he got a top 10, did he? I don't know. I think he was 11th or 12th.
Yeah, he was quite low.
18. Yeah, I mean Lord. Yeah. No wonder Thrasher's all the way down in 24th in the 250 West standings. There's privateers. Yeah. There is privateers who are beating him right now. And Thrasher's supposed to be a guy that's in the title hunt. And, you know, with a shorter season than 450s, he's completely out of it. And then Shimoda, he's not in the top 10 either, but he's at least over in 13th. So he's within spitting distance of the top 10. But, those two guys not having a great time right now. Shimoda in the main event, he had an okay start, I believe. And then some kind of accident or whatever, or just a malfunction. I thought he just stalled it out. In the middle of a 180 degree turn, and he just couldn't get it back going. I don't know what the issue was. I don't know if there was some kind of overheating issue. I couldn't figure it out. I don't know if the commentators could either. Did you get any word on what happened with his bike? I mean, I didn't see anything.
No, I just know he was sitting there for a while, just hanging out with it, and wasn't able to get back going again. So very unfortunate for those fellas. Absolutely. Cause like you're saying, like, it's, you know, there's a lot of time in the season, but when you have, especially for Nate, too many races where you're just not putting any points up, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. Obviously, he's going to still, you know, he's not a quitter by any means, as one could tell from last season racing with torn ACL.
Torn ACL, and then took granted, he was leading. So I understand why he got back up. He took multiple huge hits at Daytona last year. Or was it Atlanta? One of the two.
No.
I mean, the guy crashed like three times.
Yeah. So it's definitely not from a lack of trying, and he's gonna keep working it as long as he can. Still sucks to see a slow start to the season for him. So we'll see. You never know. Anything can happen. So hopefully those guys can get something cooking. You want to move on to 450s?
Yeah, I mean, just to round out our point standings for 250s before we go over there, all the carnage from the first 2 weeks rounds us out with Jordan Smith as our number one overall. Levi Kitchen, 5 points behind him in second. RJ Hampshire, 9 points behind him in third. So not too far off from, you know, where he was holding the red plate. I mean, you know, anything can happen in one race, and you get it right back. And then Garrett Marchbanks up in fourth. That's a fantastic standing result for the Muckoff team. He's only 12 points back from the red plate. And then Carson Mumford, 18 points back in fifth. And, yeah, I mean, the rest of the field, it's just kind of just all over the place. I mean, we got freaking Joe Shimoda down in 13th. So we know he's going to be shooting up pretty quick. The rookie Julian Beaumaire in seventh, just that's a fantastic result for the 17-year-old who is not only a world champion jet skier. I found he's also an equestrian rider as well. So the dude can ride horses, he can ride jet skis, and he can ride dirt bikes. I mean, I just don't know what the man can't do. You know what? He's 17. Just go ahead and put him in the office, put him in the White House. Just he can.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, he's got all the skill sets required right there. Dude, he should be the Mudder champion. Riding jet skis, that's like water, horses, you know?
Yep.
Dirt.
Just do everything. You know what? Yeah. Go be the starting quarterback for the Cowboys right now. They're missing one because apparently he didn't show up about 3 days ago. I know Bert doesn't listen to these, so I'm safe. Anywho, yeah, so let's move on to 450s. What do we – I think there's one obvious thing to talk about first, and it's orange.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, I was going to say – you know, even more so than 250s, very like non-Mudder podium. Like if you said this was a normal, dry, perfect condition race and you looked at the podium, you'd be like, okay, makes sense. Nothing out of the ordinary, really. Like it adds up. Chase, Eli, Roczen.
Yeah.
Nothing out of the ordinary there.
Yeah, except I think the one thing
Chase did not make a mistake in the most mistake-prone race, which is pretty exciting. That's pretty exciting.
Well, when you talk about a dude who's prone to washing out the front and, you know, in a race where your bike needs a wash, I mean, somehow he didn't manage to do that. So,
yeah.
And we know what the reason is, right? His main focus in going into KTM was finding a more stable setup on an Austrian bike with a steel frame that isn't as prone to flexing on the front end as much as the aluminum frames of the Japanese bikes are, especially with the way they're making them. Now, granted, that means that's going to come with struggles in the whoops because of that lack of front end rebound they've had since that 2022 frame was introduced. And so far, I mean, we're seeing, you know, it was a somewhat rough Anaheim one, but overall good. He had a good pace, not himself in the whoops. And then he comes in here and he was like, in his podium interview, he was like, look, I got the win and I got it in the mud. This is a great mud ride for me. But at the same time, like, we made some major progress this week, and I was excited about how well I was doing in the dry. So he was like, I'm ready for next week. Bring it on. Like, you know, I feel way more confident on my bike than I did a week ago. Let's do it.
Yeah. And
the funny thing is, Tomac said the exact same thing. He was like, I'm glad I got it done in the mud, but I was ready for the dry. Because I made massive progress on my bike and personally riding this week, was ready to go. So because of the fact that it was a straight mudder for the entire race day, we only got one qualifying round and no free practice. And that qualifying round was just as, you know, muddy as the others. You know, we don't really have anything in the dry to go off of with either of these. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the two of those guys when we get to San Diego next week. But it's good for both of them to go ahead and come out swinging at the second round. And Kenny. Dude, can he pull in the pull? This is the weirdest thing. He pulls the whole shot, then gets so much mud into his face to where he can't even pull a tear off. He's blind. So he's sitting on top of a tabletop as guys are going past him, like pretty much like half the field, if not more. He finally is able to get the tear off, and he goes, and he passes the whole field except for Chase and Tomac to get third overall. I mean, just an incredible ride.
The guy never quits, you know? I mean, no matter what, he's out there. He's gonna put his best effort in, and that's Kickstart Kenny for you right there. I'll tell you what.
I don't know what schnitzel he was eating that morning, but it paid off, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of those European guys, Prado, he came out and absolutely crushed the heat race. He kind of reminded me of Max Anstey last year in the mud race whenever he did fantastic, because, you know, those guys that race MXGP have got more practice, I would say, on a track not exactly like this, because they don't go out there and take a supercross track and wet it down, but, you know, something with with some pretty muddy conditions. So, yeah, and he did not disappoint on that heat race whatsoever.
Dude, not at all. I mean, look, we are two rounds in from his three race little like spectacle with us, right? And he is sitting ninth in the standings, right? And he got what did he get, like sixth or seventh overall in
seventh?
Yeah, he got seventh in the in his second race there. Granted, some mudder, it's different conditions. It honestly was not like it wasn't racing like a super cross track, but who cares? You've got a complete rookie to this whole sport who's coming from MXGP, who's sitting in the top 10 of the standings. And look, I know this is a garbage statistic, but it's just funny to say he won a heat race before Jet did. If you think about it, because Cooper won his heat race. And then because Jet crashed on that one. And then in this heat race, he won his. Jet didn't win that one either. I mean,
that's interesting to think about. That's an interesting stat.
It's a meaningless stat, but it's just funny to say.
I don't think we can do a whole lot with it.
Nope, we can't. We're just pot stirring, dude. We're just pot stirring. That's all we can do.
It is a stat, nonetheless. That's interesting. Yep. Yeah, no, he had a great ride, though. And, I picked him. I would have liked for him to have finished a little better. But, seventh, we'll take it. We'll take it. Not bad.
Absolutely. Not bad at all. Yeah, I just hope he has a good run in San Diego in the dry. I'm hoping dry. There's like rain forecast for Sunday, but it's not supposed to be on Saturday. So fingers crossed, we actually get to have a race where they do all the jumps and can actually race each other. But I'm hoping he has, he stays on two wheels and is able to continue to log clean laps, maybe get another top 10 in his third and final race with Supercross. And hopefully we'll see him in 2025. He's an exciting talent.
Speaking of staying on two wheels and logging clean laps, Malcolm hasn't been able to do that very much.
No, not at all.
Not much at all. Yeah.
Unfortunately, he picked up right where he failed to pick himself up last season, to my detriment of mental health. I had bought a brand new Rockstar like replica team shirt, kind of like a F1 jersey per se, like it's not an actual jersey, it's like the team shirt with like jersey, it's weird, and immediately got cursed. I mean, I kind of picked the worst race to like wear it during.
You should have saved it for a regular race.
I should have
known this would be the one where there's the most incidences that are going to take place, but it doesn't get worse than crash and start. I mean,
except it does, because I said we were talking about this before we started recording. I was like, when he had the start and Anderson had a ghost brick in front of him that caused his bike to flip over, and then something else happened, and long story short, Malcolm ends up running over someone's bike and them, and then that's what caused him to flip over, and eventually his we'll just go ahead and break down his whole race. So that happens. I don't know if he kept tumbling over to this tough block or if he fell again.
I think that was a second fall.
I think it might have been a second fall, but somehow, some way, the poor soul crashed near a tough block. He gets up. His bike is pinned underneath a tough block. But not just that, the tough block is wedged between his bike and the rear wheel. And he can't get it out. Two of the trackside, officials are there, doing what they're supposed to do, trying to help him get that out. He gets laps twice in this process. He goes two laps down.
In the slowest race.
In the slowest race. So we're talking like 20 minutes went by. Average laps freaking 10 minutes at this point because they're rolling all the jumps and going 5 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But this was a wholesome moment, one of the most wholesome moments I've ever witnessed. On Twitter, there was like right after this happened, I start seeing videos pop about an hour after the race of a like trackside view in section one or whatever it was. This is all going on, and just someone stands up from the front row from where they're at and walks down, hops the fence. He's in like a black jacket, and then just starts helping out the track officials. Like the dude
he said, actually helped too. He immediately as he got down there, he started doing stuff, and boom, the bike came free.
Yeah, like the two officials actually stepped back
Yeah.
Like with the tuck block. And he started, you know, yanking the bike and he got it up for Mookie to go right back on it. And Malcolm's just standing the whole time, like, what's going on? Like his hands are on his hips and everything. Just, he's just distraught. He's like, I'm about to be two laps down on the slowest track. I don't even know who this guy is, but he's having to help me. These two clowns over here can't get this figured out. Like this is my second race of the season. And I'm not even going to be in the top 16. Like this is just ridiculous. And, you know, just some random fans from the stands, dude, just told his girlfriend or wife, say, hey, baby, hold my beer. I got to go help out Mookie real quick. And we hopped the fence. Just absolute insanity. I don't think that can happen in any other sport. And obviously, I heard one of the PulpMX guys talking about this, one of their post-race shows. And one of them was like, okay, number one, fans, don't do that. But number two, that was freaking awesome. So no other sport can fans participate in helping riders preventing themselves from going three laps down. So that was hilarious.
For sure.
But yeah, sorry, this is where I was getting to. I told myself when this was going on, I was like, it can't get worse than this. And then I quickly reminded myself that last year it was worse than this with Mookie having that practice crash about now in the season, you know, between races two and three and being out for basically a year. So fingers crossed, keep it clean, line up round three, get on a dry track, stay on two wheels, easy top 10, possible top five. I'll be freaking happy.
100%. Yeah, no doubt. Yep. So one, I think last thing before we move on here, Chase convincingly beat Jet Lawrence for the first time, we can say. He beat him in Super Motocross.
In Charlotte.
Rounds, right? Yep. Yeah. But it doesn't get much more convincing than lapping somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jet had a rough time, dude. Multiple tip-overs all night. Had one or two in the heat race, I believe, too, that he was in. And I think it's the first time that Honda hasn't been on a podium. I may have to post the statistic later in post. I think Lars came out and said it's the first time that Honda hasn't been on the podium in a race or race weekend since like April of last year.
Oh, my gosh.
So pretty wild. I mean, they had a terrible night. Hunter and Jet not on the podium. Shimoda's bike dies. You know, just dead in the water, like he got hit by a freaking torpedo. Is this just a rough night for the boys in red over there?
Gosh, that sucks. Yeah, man, that's crazy.
A lot of rough nights here. That's all to say. I think he still got ninth or tenth or something like that. Like that's
he got ninth
race.
You can fall over Lawrence Bowes, ninth and tenth.
That's the summary of how slow motion this race is, though. You can fall over freaking four times. And as long as you just keep picking yourself back up, you're good.
Top 10. Yeah.
Yep. Top 10. And then I will say the person that was it looked like he was going to have a pretty disappointing race compared to his expectations. And I think it was still a little bit under the bar of what we were expecting. But it ended up being okay for the long run is Aaron Plessinger. You talk about a guy that's known for being a good mud rider. There was all kinds of memes being posted of, you know, AP, you know, smiling when he finds out it's a mud race. It's the first time he ever got a fastest qualifier, so he was fired up about that. That was cool to see. I think he ended up getting second or third in his heat race because he had a mistake or two, maybe even bike problems when he was leading it, but he was leading it convincingly. So, like, he was riding good until the very end. And then I think he got an okay start in the main. And then I didn't see what happened. I didn't see – I don't know if anyone's figured out what exactly – was going on. I don't know if it was bike problems or what, but I think he started fifth or sixth and then got passed by like four people on the opening lap, like fell down to ninth or 10th or whatever. And then slowly worked his way back up to a fifth overall for the night, fifth place, and then putting himself fourth overall in the standings. So, I mean, as disappointing as that was for him not to be in play for the win and to be up there with Chase overall, he's having a good start to a season so far.
Yeah, I would say so. He's definitely still a contender for sure. I mean, the points are very close on these guys that are here in the top five. So, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's round two. You know, it's anybody's it's anybody's title at this point, but nobody's really gotten totally screwed over yet, I would say.
Except
even Malcolm. He's not so good there, but
yeah.
And even down to Adam Ciancerulo in 10th, he's 21 points down, but that's not insurmountable with how long the season is and everything. Nope. I mean, it's, you know, very plausible that any of those guys could catch up and have a good season.
I'd say the main thing that kind of sums up this 450 class is because of the fact this was a mud race, and there's just so much that just gets thrown out the window in terms of analysis and like what we can take away. Like, there's no other race we're going to see Jet Lawrence fall down four times and multiple guys take a spill, sometimes even multiple times around a lap, mm-hmm. and still be okay and get a top 10. You know, and still, you know, be able to have a decent result, right? Like, there's no other time we're going to see this many crazy things happen, except in a mud race. So, like, after Anaheim 1 and all of the craziness surrounding that, and then usually after Anaheim 1, you know, there's actually like the whole Anaheim 1 curse thing where, like, if you win Anaheim 1, I think no one for a while, no one since like 2012 when Ryan Villopoto won Anaheim 1 and then did not win the championship because he broke his leg or something like that. I think something like that. There's like a curse where if you win Anaheim 1, you're not going to win the championship.
Mm.
I think a few have defeated it, but there is a stigma around it. So don't quote me on it, but it's interesting. So like, there's always a thing of like, you don't judge the season off of Anaheim 1. You can just kind of take the results, treat them as almost handicaps, write it off, go to round two, round three, see where you're at the end of the January, go from there. But because of the fact this is a mud race, we're going into round three still. Like, I don't have a remote idea of really where the field sits, except for like about 10 to 12 people roughly. Like,
yeah.
I can be like, okay, I know 12 people here are still race winning potential. And we know about five of them are probably going to sort themselves out within the next 8 to 10 races to be in that high percentage of the top 10. But outside of that, like, it's kind of looking into round three with the same kind of predictions that I have for Anaheim 1. I mean, do you agree? I don't have a good grasp at all on the field.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think any of the teams really are going to be able to improve that much from this last week to the next, because what data are you going to use from that race to go, okay, let's make some changes here, let's make some changes here. Like, anything that you're looking at making changes on with the bike, like, I mean, if guys were looking at that, they'd come in next week with paddle tires.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, like, that's
and maybe actual paddles, like oars,
just a John boat.
Yeah. Like, if you're like an RJ and or Phil Nicoletti and you're at the top of a jump and you're about to stall out, you just break out the oar, start paddling. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some actual standing water where that would have been applicable.
Dude, like, you know what might actually work really well is one of those snow bikes where they've got the tracks.
Oh yeah.
The track on the back and the ski on the front. Dude, I would like to see, next time they have a mud race, they need to have somebody bring one of those and just do a lap just so we can see what would this work, you know?
Do that and like put out one of those like Mad Max bikes that has like actual nails put into the tire to grip on that kind of terrain or whatever. I think someone actually did that with a dirt bike for snow. They actually put nails into the tire.
They do that and they'll do it on you can ride on ice. You can ride on ice that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was wild. Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's your R&D for next week. Paddles, nails and tires.
Yes.
And forensic analysis of the mud. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on some picks for next week for Pulp MX?
Yeah. So for Pulp MX, I mean, you got to look at the top 10, right? And your first thought is, okay, who's going to be my all-star that I keep going in, you know, that I would use for round three. And honestly, if you've got Chase or Jet Lawrence available, if you didn't use him the week before, you can't go wrong with any one of those guys. But I think Tomac's a guy that is hot right now in the fact that, okay, he's got that confidence back. He put himself on the podium. He looked kind of more relieved and less tight than he did than post-race interviews at Anaheim 1. Big confidence booster for him. Didn't seem to have any kind of fatigue at the end of the race, like we saw in Anaheim 1-2. So that's a good sign. He was running chase down those that last lap and closing the gap. You could also go with a Ken Roczen as your all-star pick again, because you know the dude's got the potential to put it in the top five or top three every race. He's just down in seventh and just now being an all-star because of what happened with that freeze pileup with Malcolm Stewart, freeze, Kenny, and some poor privateer that got chucked off the face of the earth at the start of the main event in round one. Cooper Webb's another guy. I mean, I think of all these, I'd probably go with, if I had someone open, I'd probably go with a Chase or a Jet for the sake of consistency. But if one of those guys or both of those guys aren't open for your all-star pick, you could definitely take one of them or go with an Eli or maybe a Roczen. My non-all-star pick, the first two that are on the list that are outside the top eight is Jorge Prado and Adam Ciancarello. I probably won't go with them. I'm assuming that Malcolm Stewart's going to have a pretty decent, maybe an even handicap or a minus one handicap. So he should be a really good play as a non-all-star. If you can bear the possibility of wanting to slam your head through sheetrock when whatever happens to him at the start again, if it goes anything like the previous two starts. So there's that. And then Hunter, once again, talk about wanting to slam your head through sheetrock, like in round one, where he didn't even make the main event. Hunter Lawrence is another guy on the outside that you could look at. So those are kind of my, look at the all-stars and non-all-stars, non-all-stars trying to get you double points. I'd say Hunter Lawrence and Malcolm Stewart are probably going to have a decent handicap to look at, and they're hopefully going to have a decently normal race, knocking on wood here. So what about you? Who's an all-star and non-all-star or multiple of those picks you're looking at?
I really like Cooper. I think that he is not Justin Cooper. Cooper Webb. We have to specify. Mm.
Yeah.
I think that he is, I wouldn't say unrightfully, but definitely he's positioned further down than he's been riding to the ability of, is what I'd say. Because he had that kind of one-off crash in Anaheim 1, and then obviously last race was a mud race. So I really like Cooper for next week for an all-star. And then outside of that, I think the guy that has the best potential to finish in the top 10 and get you some really good points is going to be Malcolm. Yeah, just as far as likelihood of him getting in the top 10 of all the guys – out of the top eight, it's got to be him. I think the only one, well, there's probably two you could substitute for that, and that might be Justin Barcia or Hunter Lawrence. But
don't forget on Justin Cooper either. In the dry. Past Tomac in the dry in Anaheim 1 for ninth or eighth. Yeah, eighth. I mean, I think he's going to be guaranteed top points, but it could be like 10th.
Possibly. Yeah.
Sorry. Not guaranteed top points, guaranteed double points.
Yeah. Well, and here's, I'm thinking more in terms of okay, money free, bang for your buck, right? Malcolm, you got potential top five. He's a podium guy, honestly.
He's got the speed.
Good start. Keep it on two wheels. He's a podium.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing, is keeping it on two wheels. And that's why, if it weren't for the fact that I was at my parents' house watching this instead of my apartment, there would have been multiple holes in the sheetrock for me acting like Kyle and just going at it, Trevor Wallace style. So yeah.
Your security Dino thanks you.
Yes, that's for sure. I will say, don't forget about Dino, because that man had a 16-point handicap or something. No, he had a 9 or 10-point handicap. So he got 16th or whatever in the main, and that counted as a 10th place finish. So I got double points from that. So don't sleep on old Dino.
It's okay, now that's something to think about.
Now, who would I stay away from, particularly on the all-star side of things? I'd kind of just say, for your all-star pick, I'd stay away from Dylan Ferrandis and Aaron Plessinger in the draw. No, I wouldn't say AP. I'd say just Dylan Ferrandis for right now. Because AP did great in the dry, got third overall. I do think he's going to have more competition in the top five, but I think he's still a top five candidate. But But I think Ferrandis in the drive is going to fall back to a seventh or eighth, which is, you know, if you have to pick your one all-star, you want someone that's going to have at least top three potential and kind of be a lock for a top five. So I kind of lead more towards like Chase, Jet, Eli, maybe Jason Anderson, and then Ken Rocks and Cooper Webb. Take one of those off, whichever one you don't pick between the rest. I don't know. I kind of see those guys floating towards the top five for sure. AP going to be in there somewhere too. So I just think Ferrandis, he's looking really comfortable. But I think as the other guys get more comfortable and catch up in round two in the drive, I think he may fall out of that top five. So for an all-star pick, I'd stay away from that. Is there anyone that you're kind of like, either you had a bad experience with, or you're just like, I'd sleep on this pick?
Well, I've had some bad experiences already so far, so no shortage of that. But I it's tough to say because Ferrandis has been showing some really good speed on that Honda. And
he's happy.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him happy in years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They do this thing well with the whole top eight all-star situation because everybody in that top eight, like if you said next week this guy won, you know.
Wouldn't be surprised. Or
at least this guy was on the podium. Like, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously AP, that would be, you know, I would be a little surprised because he's never won before. But outside of that.
You wouldn't be surprised of the potential of them winning.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. And now, I mean, you could go off of pure statistics here and say, don't take AP because he's never had a win. That kind of
makes sense. But he was a half a lap away from getting one. So, you know, he's capable, you know,
capable, but he also still hasn't. We have to look at the statistics here. I'm just saying.
It's fair. Fair.
It's fair. The stats are the stats. Okay.
Unfortunately, you know, just like Jorge Prado won a heat race before Jet Lawrence did.
What are you going to do? You know, the stats.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You tell me I'm wrong?
Yeah.
There's somebody in Australia starting to roll over in their grave right now for me saying that. I think Daniel is starting to assemble an army of honey badgers.
Yeah. Well, Jorge Prado has the most wins of heat races in the 450 class between him, Hunter Lawrence, and Jet Lawrence. So do with that information what you will.
Not to mention, he's 1-1 record against Jet. Lost to him in the first round, but then he beat him in the second round, finished ahead of him. So it sounds like you have a 50-50 shot, you know, between him and Jorge. Okay, I can't roll this any farther. Anywho. The stats are stats.
Technically, RJ Hampshire also has more 450 heat race wins.
Okay, but also both Lawrence brothers had steamrolled RJ. Not steamrolled because RJ was like one of the only guys that was able to straight up beat the Lawrence brothers last year. And if it weren't for some bad luck, would have had. Well, you can't call it bad luck with RJ. That's like the whole RJ is going to RJ joke because just bad luck surrounds him, crazy crashes surround him. So do hilarious last lap finishes in the mud surround RJ when he absolutely cleaned out Jet. And just complete like power washed the whole last turn. That was just hilarious. One of the funniest finishes to a race I've ever seen was New Jersey, RJ Hampshire and Jet Lawrence last year. That was hilarious. Yeah. We leave with the 450 top 10 standings being Chase Sexton at first, Jet Lawrence 7 points off of him at second, Eli Tomac 10 points off of him at third, Aaron Plessinger also 10 points off of him at fourth, so technically tied for third. Great result from AP. Dylan Ferrandis 12 points off of number one at fifth. Jason Anderson 13 points off at sixth. Ken Roczen also tied for sixth at 13 points off at seventh. Cooper Webb 18 points off at eighth. Jorge Prado 21 points off at nine. And Adam Cianciarulo 21 points off at 10th. So three different guys tied for different positions there. Still a lot of unpredictability going into round three. The last two rounds we have tried to predict the top three. I don't know if we want to do that because it's that crazy. But if you want to, I'm open to it. But if you just want to write off and be like, look, we don't know, because I don't know.
I'll throw one out there.
Okay.
Cooper Webb.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. I'm just going to say a prayer / prediction. Maybe a prayer diction. Is that the right way to combine the words, maybe?
Sure.
Mookie puts it top five. Just please. Keep her on two wheels. You've got the speed.
Yeah.
That's all I want. I want to get back to the feeling I had in 2022 where I could watch Mookie just go be a machine and dice those kids up for a top five or a podium.
I hope that doesn't happen only for one reason, because I know you're going to pick him in Paul Mookie. And I can't pick him because I picked him this last week. And so I'm sorry, Malcolm Stewart, Stewart family. I hope this next weekend is not the most optimal. The rest of Cole's picks are horrible. Let's go with that.
You can do that.
He can still finish.
I do reverse psychology. I do reverse psychology. I don't wear the team shirt. I wear like Honda, like this. And I don't pick him so that he'll do well.
Yeah, do that. That's a great idea. Do that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. All right. Goodness sake. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just gonna go and pray for him to keep on two wheels. It's not been his fault. So I'm just hoping for the lack of craziness for those surrounding him. So, yeah. With that being said, we're going to wrap this one up. We'll see you guys next time.
Later.